Hi, friend. Today is part two of a conversation with Erica Lucas. So last week we talked on the podcast about the five mistakes that she has seen new entrepreneurs make, but it was how she came up with that topic that really grabbed my attention and led to today's conversation. See, she created an Instagram reel about the five mistakes that she sees new entrepreneurs make after talking to one of the founders she works with. And the conversation was centered around if it was time to shut down the business or not. And this really grabbed my attention. And so what we're going to talk about today is the go-to tips from Erica on how to know if it's time to shut down your business. And the reason that I really wanted to focus on this is because I don't hear many entrepreneurs talk about this. I've seen people shut down their business, but I haven't really heard very many conversations about how you end up in that place of deciding of whether or not it's the next thing to do. And I often work with clients. And so just so you know, if you and I are not working together and you're wondering, am I alone in this? Please know you're not alone. I work with clients all the time who hit a point of asking the question, when is it time to throw in the towel? Nothing is working. I don't know if I should just shut this down. And I laugh because I have said the exact same thing to all of my coaches and mentors. You are not alone in this. So during our conversation, we talk about a lot of different things, but it boils down to evaluating two sets of things in your business and then getting support from another entrepreneur so that you're not trying to do this all by yourself. And so I want you to keep that in your mind because we talk about a lot of different things in this episode and this conversation is filled with information, but really it comes down to evaluating two things and ensuring that you get support from another entrepreneur because you're likely feeling like you're alone and that this is such a hard decision and you're going to get tied up in what are other people going to think. And so I really want you to get the support that you need if you're in this spot. And like I said, this conversation is packed with so many helpful tips, but it's also packed with a lot of honesty, which is always on the podcast, but this one in particular, because this conversation isn't had very often. And so Erica and I both talked about feelings of failure and how we've navigated it. And she talks about when, you know, it's the best time to shut down a business because she has helped people navigate that specifically, while I have not actually done that. And so she's the expert on this. But just in case you didn't catch last week's episode, which is episode number 229, if you didn't hear it, I still want to tell you about Erica and tell you a little bit about her, but you can always go back to that episode as well. Erica is the founder of Stitch Crew, which is an organization providing capital and resources to women and minority entrepreneurs. Erica is also the founder of Vest, an investment fund and peer network for women professionals. And in this capacity, she invests in women-led companies supporting women, working parents, and inclusive employers. And while there are many other titles in her bio, I'm actually just going to stop and highlight those because it shows you the type of founders that she works with and where her passion comes in for supporting entrepreneurs. She is a true mentor, and I know that you're going to feel that energy come through in today's conversation. So I won't make you wait any longer. Let's hear from Erica. This is the Unapologetic Entrepreneur Podcast, a podcast for passionate entrepreneurs just like yourself who are looking to create a profitable and productive business that you are proud of. On this show, we explore entrepreneurship success stories, but not just the highlights. We get into the nitty-gritty details so that you know more about the path traveled to achieve that success. See, I'm on a mission to help you never feel like a failure again when it comes to achieving your goals. And so much of that is setting realistic expectations of the effort needed, goals that align with the season of your life, and ensuring that you have the accountability in place that you need. So on this podcast, you can expect real conversations, practical tips, and lots of encouragement along the way so that you have everything you need to follow through and actually achieve your definition of success. So if you're ready to go from unsure to unapologetic, be sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Erica, thank you so much for coming back for part two of this podcast episode series. I'm so excited to have you back this week.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed our conversation and I was excited to jump on this and talk about more stuff regarding entrepreneurship and just life in general.
Exactly. I just loved it so much. And, you know, it's very rare that it happens that we can take one episode and then really quickly record another one because everyone's schedule is so busy and it just doesn't usually work out. So I'm really glad it did. So last week we talked about the 5 mistakes that new entrepreneurs make. And I just loved how we had that conversation, and I'll make sure it's in the show notes so everyone can go back and listen to that episode too. But that conversation came from talking to a founder who was thinking about shutting down a business. And that's what I want to talk about today, because there's so many people who are in just in that grind, in that working, and really trying to make their business work. And they have that moment of, at what point do I shut something down? So that's where we're going to talk about today. And I'm so excited to hear this because I've never actually heard this answer before. So I'm very curious.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it depends. You know, it's every situation is unique. I think sometimes the hustle culture or the perseverance culture would lead a lot of founders to believe that even when things aren't going right, even when customers are not really responding to their solution, their service, that they should just keep going because things are going to happen. So that's fantastic if you have like a set aside and you can still take care of bills and you're not maybe the primary breadwinner and you don't have to care for your family or your household or whatever. But it's not really the case for a lot of us, right? Particularly if we are the primary breadwinner, or if we are, in this case, a single mother who has to provide for, everyone in the household. So I think I want to be clear that I do believe that sometimes we have to be patient and we have to keep going and we have to pivot and do the things that we have to do to make our business solutions work. By listening to the customer. However, there are times where I feel like if your solution for some reason, and I think the key driver here is, what are the customers saying? You know, and are you getting enough revenue, and are you bringing enough to validate the idea? Because a lot of first-time entrepreneurs in the early stages, would, again, oftentimes don't listen to the customer, oftentimes get in their head. And, that's when it can become dangerous, right? Because if your customer is really not satisfied, if they're not coming to you, if they're not really, getting sold on what it is that you're doing, then you really need to think about your business model as a whole. Now, there's another component that we don't often talk about. And that is when you feel burnout, when you're no longer passionate or feel like the work that you're doing is fulfilling. And in addition to that, you're not bringing enough revenue to care for yourself, to care for your employees if you have them, and to make things work from a revenue generating perspective and from a mental health statement. And I think that's the conversation I was having with this particular entrepreneur, again, because she is a single mom. She was bringing in some revenue. She is in a market where, it's saturated. There's a lot of competition, low barriers to entry. And so she was like, I'm bringing money, but is it enough? Right. And that's when we then shifted the conversation to talk about her mental health and how much she actually was enjoying what she was doing. And does she see herself doing this work in the next year, in the next 2 years? If yes, why? If no, why? And I just don't think that, when we talk about entrepreneurship, we always talk about when things are going rosy and when things are going great, and we try to provide good advice. But I think we need to be talking more about when things are not going well, whether it's, we don't have product market fit, or am I hustling in ways that I'm not hustling, or do I need to bring in resources to optimize the way I'm talking about my company and my services in a way that relates to my customers? Or is there just no product fit and really what I'm, because that happens too, right? Like sometimes we fall in love with our idea, we think it's a great idea, but really the market, it's not receptive to it. So sometimes we just have to pivot or shut down in that cases, but we don't talk about it. So a lot of founders, I think, feel when they're in this situation, I think they feel very lonely. I think they feel like they're the only ones going through that, and they don't talk to anybody. And so then they get more isolated, and instead of troubleshooting or talking about the problem, then they just get more in their head.
Right. Oh my gosh, so many great things there. I really like that you started the conversation with, okay, are you bringing in money? You know, we have to really look at that first of, are you bringing in revenue and do you have product market fit, which is, you can tell if you're bringing in revenue. And I think a lot of people get stuck there, at least the people that I'm working with. What happens is they don't have a big audience yet. They don't have a lot of people talking to them. And so they say, I don't know. I don't know if this is working or not. And oftentimes I find myself having conversations with, we have to get this in front of people. And so often, and I'm not trying to point fingers here because we all do this, so often it's like, I'm going to post more on social media. And my response is, I need you to have a Zoom conversation or a face-to-face conversation with someone and actually ask the question. So do you agree with that? And do you encourage people to do that as well?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, at the early stages of a company, I don't believe in like even surveys, you know, like online surveys or stuff like that, because I think that they can be very biased. I think that at the early stages, you have to do things that, once again, and we talked about this in the previous episode, you have to do things that don't scale, and you have to do things that maybe feel a little bit uncomfortable, but at the earliest stages of your company, you're in a discovery mode. You need to be curious about what people are saying. You need to figure out what is the main pain points that people are experiencing. What solutions are they currently using? So that you can then optimize your offering or know how to appeal to that audience in a more genuine and direct way, then you're never going to get that information on social media. You're never going to get that information on an online survey. You have to do the one-on-one conversations. And you have to stop selling. Yeah.
Yes.
You also have to, another thing that I see is that, especially with first-time entrepreneurs, we go into these meetings or these conversations with people trying to sell our product or trying to sell our solution when we should be going into these conversations just listening, right? Mm-hmm. Tell me, related to my product, what is the main pain point? What do you currently use? Why is it working or why is it not working? What can be improved? So most of the time you're asking questions and then you're listening, not talking.
Right. And often that's so hard. And I have tried so hard to encourage people. And even as far as like in some of my programs, I've given scripts like, here's what you can do and actually have a conversation to understand more. Not that I do anything perfectly, but I can tell that there's a barrier there, that no one really wants to have a conversation one-on-one and ask questions. And I know that that's a barrier. So that's why I came up with like, here's the questions you can ask and here are the things. But it really is as simple as, tell me how you struggle with this thing, understanding that pain point, and then really listening. And another thing that you said that was really hard for me to really get through at the very beginning of my business was, and you didn't say these words exactly, but this is what I say, is like, I don't need to be married to the solution that's in my mind. I have an idea of what I think could work, but what actually works is what someone tells me is going to work. And that has been the hardest thing. How have you seen people work through, yes, knowing their idea, but also being receptive to their target audience's feedback?
I think that this is where you find, you know, the founders that are coachable, the founders that are in it for ego purposes. Because one of the key lessons on entrepreneurship or building successful businesses is that you have to be adaptable, right? You have to adapt your offering, your service, your company, your culture, your talent bench, everything. It has to adapt with the times, with what customers are demanding, with how customer demographics shift. The key thing is that you have to be adaptable. If you're not adaptable, look at companies like Kodak there's going to be things that take over just because of the fact that you thought, and even if everything's going well and you feel like, you know, you are selling and you're bringing the revenue and you have good customer feedback, your mind should always be in curiosity mode to to see and what are the next things that I may have to adapt. Maybe your product, it may be your service, it may be the way you talk to customers, it may be your customer base, but adaptability is so key for founders. And when I'm coaching entrepreneurs in our programs or in our portfolio companies, and I see hesitation to do that, that's always a red flag for me to see, okay, why are you hesitant? Is it because I'm wrong or because you have validation? Mm-hmm. Or is it because maybe you're too close to the deal? Is it ego-driven? Is it scarcity mindset-driven? Is it fear? What is causing you to be so hesitant to receiving this feedback?
Right. And I think that, at least for me, I can speak for my own experience, is that leads to low revenue. So I share this story all the time that I thought for sure I knew exactly what my audience wanted, and I created a course. And at that time, I was focused on marketing and everyone was asking me about Instagram. So I was like, I'll just create this Instagram course, which, by the way, terrible idea because Instagram changes like every day. So I don't know what I thought I was doing. But I thought, I'm going to create this Instagram course. It's going to be great. It's going to help so many people. I spent not just hours, like days, weeks thinking about this course, creating this course, dealing with the technology, all of it. And the content in the course, like I still have those videos on a hard drive. And when I look back to that every now and then, the content was really good. But my audience did not actually want that, and no one bought it. I actually had like two people buy it. I made like $100 on this course. It was a massive fail in terms of revenue. And so I should, like, in that moment, I was feeling like, oh my gosh, like this is such a bad, like I did bad, right? I put it all on me. But really it was, I just jumped the gun and had an idea and ran with it and didn't test anything with my audience. Contrast that to another time that I ended up creating a DIY type of a course that within a handful of days had 100 sales because of the fact that I did the market fit of like, I tested everything. There was nothing that I did not put in front of my audience before I created that thing. And I was so happy to see that contrast. But I know I could have easily gotten stuck in that first moment of like, that course didn't work. Should I shut down my business? And so I'm bringing it back to the first thing we have to really recognize is if revenue is low, did you have product market fit? And in that case for me, I did not, but I figured out what fit. So is that really the first step of like, okay, if you're thinking about shutting something down or having this feeling like nothing is working, the first thing is product market fit and looking at that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the first thing, yes, like let's look at the, semantics of your startup. You know, what's the business model? What are customers saying? Are the KPIs moving in the right direction or the opposite direction? Yes. But outside of that, you actually said something that I think it's very important where, you know, honestly, running a business, in my opinion, Amanda, is 80% mindset. Or, you know, what's in here, and 20% cement, you know, like when people ask me, you know, there's not a blueprint for how to build and grow a business because every business is different and you're serving different customers and stuff like that. So I don't buy into those like, oh, this is how you grow a business or this is, well, it depends. Right. It's very specific to the type of business and the type of solution that you're building. But outside of that, you said something about, you know, accepting failure. And I think that that's what's in here. And that's what a lot of entrepreneurs, particularly first time entrepreneurs, get stuck in. It's just accepting that failure doesn't mean that you're a failure, which then we go into attaching our personal identity into the startup, right? And why we shouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. But it also, so that's why you shouldn't do that. But also I think it's very important for entrepreneurs to know that failure is part of the process. It's not something that you're always going to outdo, right? Like, oh, if I just get here, we talked about this too in the previous deal, problems are always going to be there. Failure, it's inevitable. if you're trying to be curious and if you're trying to constantly adapt and improve your solution and your company and evolve as a founder. So the faster that you accept that, the better we're going to be, right? Because then we're not going to associate that failure with our personal identity. That's where I see a lot of founders struggle to shut down, because they're like, if I shut down, then everybody's going to think I'm a failure. And if I shut down, what are people going to say? What's my family going to say? What are investors going to say? You know, now there's a way of shutting down with dignity and in a way, especially if you have investors, in a way that, you know, it's transparent. But that's where I see the entrepreneurs struggle the most, is when they attach their personal value to a failure, whether it's a company failure or the process of shutting down.
Right. I firsthand have experienced this several times, and I'm sure it will continue throughout my business, because I think you have to catch it. I'm much better about it now, 6 years into running a business, because when that Instagram course failed, like, let's look at that and say, like, I even hate saying things are failures because I learned so much. But at the same time, it failed. On paper, that was a massive flop. It did not work. When I look at the hours spent, the dollars that equate to my hours, and what I made, massive failure. But what I learned is unbelievable in terms of how I was able to turn that around. And I think that because I had that experience so early on and I saw the difference, that I every time I fail, I think about that Instagram course and how much I learned from that silly Instagram course, which is probably why it's still on a hard drive, so I can like go back and look at it, because I experienced that so quickly. And I'm not saying, and you're not saying this either, that failure sucks and it definitely hurts. But every time it happens, I think, what can I learn from this and apply it quicker next time? And I have adopted that idea of just fail fast. And I'm sure you've told other people to do the same thing.
Yes, although I don't get me started with, I don't think that we give women and people of color in particular the same latitude to fail. So like I don't know who your audience is, so they may get mad at me. But I do think that certain people, like our male peers, you know, if they receive 98% of venture capital, they, you know, if they fail, they fail forward or fail fast. So I do agree with rapid iteration and like accepting failure. But I agree 100% with you. When I say that, I don't mean remove your emotions from going through that failure, right? You have to feel it, and you have to go all in and feel, you know, and it will take time, right? Because especially if you're a solo entrepreneur and you put so much effort and hours and time and dedication to it, and it doesn't work out, you can't just shut down and then, you know, move on to the next thing. It's going to suck and it's going to feel uncomfortable. So never would I want you to rush into those feelings and those emotions, because I think you have to go through it to then, to your point, get the learnings out of it, right? And then kind of take the, it's like the grievance process, right? Take the time to feel what you need to feel, then take the time to see, okay, what did we learn that we can apply to the next startup or to the next project or whatever? So I think that's very important. But I do think that normalizing failure and giving people, particularly women, the latitude to fail. And, you know, we expect, you know, these are societal norms, right? These are even outside of our comfort zone, that have instilled in women, even from a very early age, that we have to be almost perfect. You know, the way we talk, the way we sit, the way we talk, the way we eat, when we're allowed to say something, when we're allowed to show discomfort, when we're allowed to, you know, it just, we have different languages and different expectations and parameters for male versus female that I think affect a lot of women when it comes to identifying or going through failure, right? Because of all of these societal norms that, and, you know, all these brainwashing that we go through sometimes because of our culture, because of the way we were brought up, or again, because of societal norms.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. And I totally agree. You know, I'm sitting here thinking, yeah, I talk about failing fast now. I did not feel that 6 years ago when I started my business. I did not feel like I was failing fast. I felt like I was failing, period. And I didn't quite understand. And I am now thinking, because you just brought it back to me, of how much I was worried about what other people saw of that, of like what they thought of how it was playing out. It's so interesting because I can't speak for any guys, and I know there's exceptions to all of this of like girls are not in one bucket, guys are not in one bucket. Like, but typically speaking, like we have these generalizations, I have worked with more women than I have men, but the men that gravitate towards me tend to have similar feelings. I kind of lump them all together because it's not necessarily a gender thing. It's like, I'm self-doubt. I have a lot of self-doubt. And so the most people that work with me, whether it's male or female, are worried about what other people think. And when I really start digging and asking who, sometimes it's people on social media, but most of the time it's their friends and their family. And for me, yeah.
Closest to you.
Yeah. And it's really that idea, because someone on social media can think one thing, but you may never see them. They can hurt your feelings by saying something rude, but you're probably not going to interact with them. Friends and family, you're like seeing them at Thanksgiving and you're like, oh gosh, they're going to think I'm a failure because I shut down this business. And for me, I remember when I started my business, it was because I was laid off. And the number one person I was worried about was the person who laid me off. I was like, she's going to think, who does she think she is starting this business? Because clearly, whether or not she would say these words, I wasn't good enough to keep at her company. And so I thought, oh my gosh, what is she going to think? And wouldn't you know, Erica, that she got on my email list as soon as I started my business. And ever since then, I've thought, what does she think? And I've never seen her again, so I don't know. But I remember that from 2017, Amanda. And I think about it now, and I don't really think about what she thinks about. But when it pops in my mind, I think, she's proud. I'm just going to say that she's proud, and we're going to move forward. But 2017, Amanda was very concerned. Hey there. I promised to get you back into the episode really soon, but I wanted to share a special message with you today. So maybe you're feeling like you've let yourself or others down because your business isn't performing like it has before, or you think it should be right now. I want you to know that you, my friend, are not alone. So many of my clients are feeling this way as well, but the clients who are still feeling proud of their businesses have two things in common. They've continued to make progress towards their goal, and their business is still profitable. So even if they aren't exactly where they wish they were, they are still proud because of these two things. I'm on a mission to help entrepreneurs build a profitable and productive business. And if you're looking to do this, I would absolutely love to support you. You can find all of the available options on my website at amandamckinney.com/work with me. But if you still aren't sure what option is best for you, or you just want to have a conversation, send me an email or a direct message on Instagram with the word support, and we can have a chat and see what will fit your needs the best. Okay, let's get back into the episode.
This is why it's so important to not attach our personal identity to any job role, company, whether it's our company or somebody else's, because I think that we can get into this, we can internalize failure and it's just going to be destructive, you know, and it can get in a toxic way. I'll just say something else about, you know, the gender issue, because this is true and it's data that's, you know, several reports have said. We as a society continue to evaluate women based on their performance, as opposed to we evaluate our male peers based on their potential.
Oh my gosh. That's why
for women, think about when people are applying for jobs or getting accepted for jobs. If you see, and this is proving, this is not Erica talking, but that it's been Harvard studies, McKinsey, and all of that, showcasing, you know, how recruiters review resumes of male peers based on potential. And with women, it's like, you know, and we do it to ourselves, by the way, because when we apply for jobs, how many times, Amanda, did you apply for a job and maybe you miss one or two of the requirements or qualifications that there were, and you stopped yourself from applying for that job. To where our male peers, and I give it to them. Yeah, I'm not criticizing them or anything. I mean, good for them. But our male peers will not have five of them. And their mentality is, you know what, I'll just learn it once I'm in there. Right? Because even as little kids, that's what we just have different ways of thinking about it. It's changing, and I'm really excited about that. But for the longest time, you know, we encourage even our children, you know, boys, to be risk takers, to do things, you know, and to have fun and to try new things. And oftentimes we don't allow little girls to have that same latitude. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of data saying this, but again, it's why it's even more important for us to talk about real life experiences, to talk about how we can support one another, to talk about not attaching our identity to that, again, your company or that failure, and then to accept it as part of the process, right? Mm-hmm. I think it was Adam Grant. You talked about him in our last episode, didn't we?
Adam Grant? Yeah.
So, yes. So I'm going to, another thing that he said that I remember him saying was that he always picks a project every year that he knows he's likely to fail at it, because he wants to make sure that he trains his mind to say, and it's okay. Yes. And I'm not going to attach my ego, and I'm not going to touch my identity, and I'm not going to care what other people think. And I'm going to stay curious, you know, while doing it. So I thought that was such a smart thing to do, because I do think it's a muscle. It's not like we're going to sit here and talk about this episode, and then all of a sudden we're like, you know, failure is not going to suck.
Right.
And we're just going to be more risky and stuff like that. No, we're not saying that. But I think that it's a muscle that you train, right? And you do little things and you create habits to help you be more comfortable with it.
I totally agree with that. And I'm remembering that podcast episode. At least I heard him talk about it on a podcast episode, and it was fabulous. And I really took that to heart. And the one I heard was on the Huberman Lab. And so they were talking about neuroscience, because that's what Dr. Andrew Huberman talks about. And them talking about the brain, and there actually is a part of the brain that lights up, that really helps longevity of life, cognitive life, if we exercise that part of the brain, that when we do things that are very difficult for us and that we most likely might fail, those sort of things, because it really does amazing things for the brain. So there's all of that. And I think it's so scary. Like you said, like, no one listening to this podcast episode is going to be like, oh, I can do it all now. I'm not scared of failure. Like, we're always going to have that. But I do think it gets so much easier if you just push through the first few times, because then you can remind yourself, like, well, I mean, nothing that bad happened. Even if, and this is part of like coming back to like when to shut something down. I think I'll speak for myself that I would put myself in the bucket of, I would definitely think, like, what would other people think? Did they think I failed? Anytime I've pivoted things in my business, I've thought, I wonder what people think about this. I've continued to move forward, so it hasn't stopped me yet, but I do think about it. And I'm just curious at, like, how much we think about, like, being worried about what other people would think, how much that affects someone holding on to something that is no longer working, which is what we started talking about. So it's like you look at, okay, something's not working, revenue's not coming in, there's not product market fit. And so you're saying, okay, something's not working. And I like how the next thing that you talked about with this particular founder, at least, was, do you still want to do this? Like, checking in with your mental health, do you still want to do this? And so I know that there's other people that are listening that are like, maybe money's coming in, maybe it's not, I don't know. But they're having the feeling of, I don't know if I still want to do this anymore. How do you navigate that?
Yeah, I think you need to make a space for yourself, right? And there is burnout. That actually, burnout is not infinite, right? There are things that you can do. And by the way, I also have a podcast, Amanda. Well, it's not mine, but it's our company, Vester Podcast.
One.
We just talked about burnout in our last episode. And there are ways, and, you know, unfortunately, burnout on the last episode, we talked about how it affects caregivers. So I know it's more pronounced on people that have to deal with growing their growing their company. And then after they leave their company, which I don't know that we ever leave it, but after we take breaks, right, from working in our company, then we have to go home and care for our children or our parents or our grandparents or loved ones. And so we're doing paid work and then we're doing unpaid work at home. And then in addition, we have to do dinner and household management and all of that stuff. So that's burnout, right? That can pile up and it's cumulative. But there are ways to mitigate it and there are ways and habits that you can create to get out of that zone, right? And to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. One thing. The most important question though, are you still enjoying it? Right? Because that's not just burnout. That is, are you still in it for the right reasons? Is it still aligned with your values? Does it still represent who you want to be and how you want to show up? And, you know, is it additive to the lifestyle you want for you and for your family? And this is why it's so important, just like you said, it's so important that you don't take into account what other people think. And you mentioned the story of like, okay, you're worried about what other people think because it might be a failure. Mm-hmm. But it also happens when the company's doing well. And I'll tell you our story. So I'm actually not an entrepreneur by, you know, like I ended up doing Best and Stitch Group out of frustration. But my husband is a serial entrepreneur. And he actually had a business. He owned three or four different I think it was four at one time, different cocoa franchises here in the state of Oklahoma. And people love them. And he had customers and they all love the it was a digital fitness gym. So this was pre-Fitbit, you know, pre a lot of the technology that you now can monitor, you know, your reps and all of that. It was pre all of that. And everybody loved. And when he says, you know, I'm thinking about doing something else, most of his customers were like, no, please don't go. Please don't go. And he actually stayed open probably another year and a half because he wasn't in it anymore. He wanted to do other things. He wanted to try other things. He also was monitoring technology coming in that could disrupt the business, but he didn't trust himself and he started trusting what other people were telling him. So I think that it's important to listen to customers' feedback. It's important to listen to other people, but more importantly, it's being able to, you know, go through that feedback and see what works for you. Like you always have to make time for you to see, are things still working for me? Are things still aligned with what I want to do, with my values, all of those things outside of other people? And I don't think that we do that enough.
Oh, gosh. That one is huge, and I'm going to hold on to that one. I feel like I've had some experiences with that throughout my journey of starting the business and things pivoting. Because every time I pivoted, I thought, oh gosh, everyone that's in my audience right now is going to be upset that I'm changing. And I've experienced it. There have been people who have been upset when I've shut something down. I had a membership for right at 3 years. Really, I mean, the numbers, all things were successful. But I felt the nudge to do something different. And I mean, you said your husband kept it for about a year. I would say, like, I started thinking about it and I really thought about it for about 6 months. And all I could think about was, how am I going to tell these people who I adore, by the way, everyone who's still listening, who was in the membership, I still love you so much. And I adored them. And I could not imagine not having that space. But at the same time, I knew that I needed to shift something. And oh my gosh, like in the message, this may be too much for people, I don't know. In the message to my members, when I delivered the message that I was going to shut it down, and I gave space, like I did not shut it down in a day. I gave them several months and we talked through everything. But like I teared up in the message. And when I recorded it, I thought, I'm going to do one take and I'm going to see how this goes. And if I don't want to send it, I'll do another one. And I sent the original message and it was so sweet. They were so supportive. because while they were really sad that it was shutting down, they were so glad that I thought about it, that I was open, that I gave the space that I did. But I really did think about it a lot. And I had to make, I mean, it was way harder to let it go than it would be to have kept it, in my opinion. Like, I think it would have been easier for me to keep it, especially because the numbers were there. And it was growing and all things. Like, I mean, the revenue dip afterwards was real.
Yeah. Yeah, but if your heart is no longer in it, you have to be honest with yourself. And, you know, you have to be honest with those that you're serving as well. We've had to do, even with Stitch Group, we've had to, you know, there have been programs that I was very personally attached to. But, you know, we honestly just were running out of capacity and also was shifting our direction from who we wanted to be as a company and as an organization. And if you looked at our numbers, everybody was happy. Board was happy. Investors were happy. Sponsors were happy. We were putting a lot of product, a lot of programs. We're helping a lot of people. All seemed great. But strategically and you know, when talking to the team, talking about capacity and what everybody can pull through to make these programs happen, then we have to take a step back and say, no, we need to, again, be adaptable. Mm-hmm. And some programs, even if we love them so much, they're just not going to continue next year. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the important part, right? It's taking the time to do self-evaluations, right? Do evaluation on your company. What's the health of your company? What are the revenues? What are the KPIs? But then do a self-check as well, right? As the leader of that organization. And then you can decide what the next move is. Maybe you keep the company and just hire somebody to take on your role. That's fantastic because as entrepreneurs, that's where we want to be, right? We want to not be the operators. We want to be the owners. Maybe you just hire somebody. If it's more related to burnout or you wanting to do something else and your company's mature enough that it could support you removing yourself from it. Fantastic. Other times it might be, you know, the company evaluation, the metrics are not there. You know, the willingness is not there. And then the self-evaluation is not there. And maybe that's when it becomes time to do something else. But I think it's very important. And by the way, when I say you have to do the self-evaluation, you have to go internally, that needs to happen. But also it's healthy to talk to other people, particularly entrepreneurs who have been there. Because if we talk to family who have never run a business or have, you know, most of the time they're going to talk to us out of love and out of protection, right? So they're going to try to protect us, but they've never been in our situation. So maybe their feedback is not going to be as, you know, it's not going to have real time or real life experiences. If you talk to entrepreneurs, particularly the ones that are willing to share the struggle, not just the successes and all of that stuff that you see on Instagram, I think that that's when you learn a lot and you don't feel as lonely and you don't feel like you're the only one that has ever had to go through that. Because I guarantee you, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but, you know, most entrepreneurs fail at their first go. Right. And then again, we talked about this on the last one. Then you learn what not to do the second time and then you apply it and fantastic.
Yes. I dug up that stat, by the way, which I should have had ready for you this time, but I don't have it in front of me. But I did find that stat. And you're right. I mean, the chance of success in the second business is substantially more. Substantially more. And then the third and fourth and however many, because once you're bitten by that entrepreneur bug, at least for me, and maybe some people do not feel like this. Maybe some people get into entrepreneurship and then they're like, that is not for me. I'm going to exit stage left, which is also fine. And you know that it's not for you. But for me, it's like I have, you and I have talked about this, I have like three business ideas just hanging out because I have these ideas now. I think like that now. And so the chances of me starting another business are high it's going to continue. And so taking those lessons, I think, is great. So I really appreciate that you just brought.
And by the way, investors actually like second-time entrepreneurs. Right. Not just because it de-risked their investment, right? Like, well, the reason why it de-risks their investment is because since you've already done it, you know what not to do, right?
True. Or
your knowledge, it just increases.
Yeah.
And so literally as investors, often we see that as a de-risking factor, right? Oh, they've been an entrepreneur before. Whether that company was a success or not, they've learned something from it. Mm-hmm. And so it's actually, a lot of investors, in fact, only invest in, second time entrepreneurs or so on, because it's a way to quickly see if, okay, they've been there, done that. And we're now going into their second time going in.
That's really good to hear. You know, everyone, I don't know how much percentage wise my audience wants to ever go for funding or anything like that. But even if you're never wanting funding and investment in your business, hearing that has to be helpful. I know it is for me. I was just like, oh, that's really interesting, because it makes a lot of sense. You know, I think I could go into a meeting with an investor, with yourself, with someone else, so much more confident today than 2017 version of Amanda could have ever, because I can speak to, this is what I did, these are the failures I had, this is what I learned, here's how I pivoted. And I know more of like someone, like you're saying, someone else can breathe life into me that I don't even know what I don't know. By having someone else come in and be like, oh, you have a great idea. Here's how we can move forward with this even quicker than you can ever imagine. Because I've been just doing it all on my own for so long in my business. And so that's really helpful to hear. Thank you for sharing that. That's a great tip. So going back to when to shut something down, attaching ourselves, what I really heard you say is you have to do two inventories. One is of the data. Are the numbers there? Is the revenue coming in? How's that cash flow? Do you have product market fit? It's a lot of data reflection. The other is the self-reflection of, do I really want this still? How does it feel in the future to continue down this path? And that both of them, it's helpful to go through with someone else. Because if we swim in our own head and our own thoughts, I think we could hang out there for too long. Would you agree?
100%. And it's even better if you go through it with somebody else that's been there.
Right.
So another entrepreneur, whether they've been successful or they've also, better yet, if they've had to shut down themselves, right?
Because
then they can tell you what they did or how they did it or what they learned through that process and how they overcame that period of time. But it doesn't have to be. It could be a successful entrepreneur, but every successful entrepreneur has gone through failures.
Right.
Whether they post on it on Instagram and social media or not. I tell people all the time, because a lot of people do look at sometimes, what we post on Stitch Crew and on Investor Ventures, it's all forward facing, right? And so we post about the wins and we post about the work that we're doing. I, on my personal one, tried to be super real, and I will tell you, but I always tell you, most people are not there to tell you how they got there behind the scenes, right? And a lot of times you see the wins and stuff like that, but really, we get a lot of no's, we get a lot of things thrown our way and we question a lot of times, hey, are we doing this the way that we should be doing it? How is everybody's pulse? Are we still in it for the right reasons? Is the revenue there? Are we serving our customers in the way that they deserve? Because of the work that we do, we take that question very seriously, right? Particularly in our work as it relates to women, because there have been such a divestment. We always go back to ask ourselves, hey, are we the best organization providing these services? Or are we better off lifting other organizations that could do a better job doing this, right? Like, so for example, with Vest, we've chosen not to engage in certain aspects of women advocacies because we see other organizations that have been there, have done it, are on the ground, and we don't have the tools, resources, network that they have. And so what we try to do is like, let's support them. Right. Mm-hmm. So but that takes a lot of self-reflection, like you said, as an organization, but even as ourselves, as a team. When I do my personal self-reflection, and then I always go back to the team, right? Because it's not, it's not just me.
Right.
But yeah, it's super.
That is so helpful to hear you talk about. And I really like that question of, am I serving my customers in the way they deserve, my clients, however we refer to them? I love that because that's what we all want. At least everyone listening to this podcast and your podcast, you know, everyone who's in our orbit is wanting to serve someone in a way that makes their life better, that solves the problem. And so if we can come at it from that angle, it takes the ego out of it completely. If we just ask ourselves that question, and instead of honing in on a product or a service that we love so much, it's like, let's give them what they deserve. How can we look at it in that way? And I would say 9 times out of 10, the revenue is going to follow that as long as you are able to push through and do the actions that are needed because you're finding that fit. But it all comes down to, do you still want to do this too? So there's a good gut check and data check all around. So Erica, thank you so much for all of this honesty, for bringing this really kind of, not really an awkward or hard conversation. It's just one that's not had very often. And so thank you for bringing it to light and to this podcast.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me and for hosting this spaces to help other people going through it. You know, I think that if you and I can have these conversations, I think that other people should have these conversations. And then the more we normalize it, I think the less lonely we will feel as we're building meaningful companies.
I completely agree. Well, Erica, I will make sure to have everything in the show notes, but if anyone wants to follow you, just in case they didn't hear it in the last episode, where can they find you on the internet and how can they connect with you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm almost everywhere. LinkedIn, obviously, LinkedIn, Threads. I'm not on Twitter, now X, but I am on Threads. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Instagram. That's probably where I'm on TikTok, but TikTok is just more fun. I love TikTok. I think it's more real and less edited. And anyway, I love the creators on that platform.
I love it. And I'll have all those links as well as Stitch Crew and Vest and your podcast. All of those links will be in the show notes as well. Thank you again, Erica.
Thank you so much for having me.
The idea of closing your business is an emotional one. And that is the word that kept coming to my mind as I listened back to this conversation. We talked about how we can get caught up in what others think or even might think and how it's going to look if we fail. And all of this comes with a lot of tough emotions. So my friend, if you are finding yourself in this place where you aren't sure if it's time to throw in the towel, I just want you to know, and Erica wants you to know, that it's okay to feel all the feelings about the situation before you make any decision. So when I was thinking about your next step after listening to this conversation, it came down to pausing. I want you to pause and maybe even listen to this episode again, because sometimes we need to listen to something a few times to really let it sink in and understand that we're not alone in this. And that was the main thing that we wanted you to know, is that every entrepreneur fails and feels like maybe it's time to throw in the towel, maybe it's time to shut this down, but you have to pause, give yourself the space, and find the support that you need. So I want you to find a coach, a mentor, or another entrepreneur in some capacity that you can confide in and go through the evaluation phase, because that's the next thing that you need to do. After you pause and find the support you need, what you have to do is evaluate. And first, you want to evaluate the data. Look at the revenue coming in, expenses going out, and see if the business model is truly working for you. And during this phase, you also want to look at product market fit and ask yourself, have I been stuck with an idea and ignoring what my clients and my customers are telling me? Because chances are you might be doing this. This is something that I called myself out on in this episode because it is something we all do. We get hung up on an idea that we have and we don't listen to the feedback and actually change and adapt. Erica kept mentioning that adaptability is key. And so if you find yourself in this moment, I want you to ask yourself, am I giving them what they deserve to help them solve a problem? Think about your client, think about your customer, and ask yourself if you're giving them what they deserve so that you can help them solve a problem. Because when you frame it like this, you're removing your ego from the whole situation, and you might just find the answer. You might find that you've been in your own way, and you can make more money probably pretty quickly if you just applied what they told you that they wanted. I know it's not that simple, but sometimes it really is that clear. But you have to pause and often have to have someone else asking you the question to help you go through that data and help you go through those numbers. Second, you want to evaluate your mental health and what you want for your future. And I want you to ask yourself and look at your daily life and say, do I want to continue with how things are going? Now, if the answer is absolutely not, this is too hard, I don't want to do this anymore, that doesn't necessarily mean you have to shut down your business. It just means you might need to change some things. But like Erica was talking about, there's ways in which to do that and really identifying, are you really inching closer to burnout? Because if that's the case, you can make some changes, give yourself some space before making the decision of shutting down a business. Because oftentimes you can make changes that will let your business still support the life you want. But if you're truly not feeling passionate, if you're truly not excited about your business anymore, it may be time to shut it down. And that's the time where you have to really think about, okay, what is the best course of action here? So once you've looked at both the data and your mental health, you can then make an informed decision. And the decision you want to make is what will be sustainable. Regardless of your answer, know that either option is great. If you decide to make changes to try and make your business more sustainable, both from revenue as well as your mental health, that's great. If you decide it's time to shut it down, also great. Once you make the decision, it's then time to create a plan, because no one needs anything to happen really quickly and abruptly. That's where it's going to feel really shaky and you're not going to know if you made the right decision. But talking to someone else, getting the support, going through the data, checking your mental health, making an informed decision, and then a plan of how to move forward, you're going to feel really solid in the decision that you made. So remember, please remember this. We all go through this at some point. You are not alone, but you have to find the support you need. Find the coach, the mentor, a biz bestie, whatever it is that you need in this moment. Find someone to support you as you go through this, because it's a very emotional decision or an emotional situation that you're going through in order to make the decision. So give yourself lots of grace and remember that it does not matter what other people think. It matters what you need and what feels best for you and your business. You're going to learn through every single failure, whether it's an experience or you're shutting down a business and it feels like a failure. You can learn from everything, and the next step in your journey is going to be better for it. We talked about that throughout the entire episode. So no matter what your decision is, you're going to learn. So until next time, give yourself permission to decide what is best for you and your business, and grace along the way. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you for listening to this episode. If you found it helpful or inspiring, be sure to share it with someone else who could use it too. Sharing is caring, but it's also a huge boost to your accountability. Sharing this message and then talking about it will ensure that you actually take the action that was mentioned in this episode. Hello, accountability. There's nothing better than the feeling of actually following through, and I want that for you. So screenshot it, share it, and if you share it on Instagram, be sure to tag me at @TheAmandaMcKinney too. Until next time.